Are you interested in infantry? Maybe consider the Highlanders. I'm Joe Seamantle. Welcome to Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Nick Stewart. He's the commander of 1st Battalion, 161st Infantry Regiment, based out of Spokane, Washington. I've known Nick a very long time. I think you were my officer guy that was in charge when I commissioned. I think it was the first time we met. Yep. You were a second lieutenant. We're lieutenant colonels together. It's kind of fascinating. You know, this is the guard. We all kind of grow up together. He's here to talk about kind of his guard career, 1st Battalion, 161st, which is one of the longest tenured units in the Washington National Guard.
The longest.
Yeah, the longest. I think 2046 might fight you on that one. They'll argue with you too, but that's for a different argument.
Just look at their lineage.
and kind of what makes your battalion different. And then also talking about the Highlanders. So thanks for joining us, Nick. Mm-hmm. So intro and background yourself.
Yeah, happy to be here. Happy to have this opportunity, you know, to talk about the battalion that I grew up in and command today. So my background, I was born and raised in Spokane, Washington. I joined the National Guard as a high school senior. The reasons I joined are kind of twofold. My grandfather served in World War II as an infantryman, and I always kind of enjoyed his stories and appreciated his service. And so as I was getting out of high school, you know, I was drawn to that aspect of it. It's why I became an infantryman. The other reason is I was also trying to go to college, and I didn't have a lot of money to go to college. And the National Guard also provided me, you know, with GI Bill and tuition assistance and some ways to help pay for school. So I enlisted as an infantryman, really in honor of my grandfather, and joined the Washington Army National Guard as a private, and went off to basic training in AIT at that time.
Yeah. And then when did you commission? We were both on the O4 deployment.
We were
both enlisted on that deployment together as well. So different areas.
But. So I deployed with one of the 161. I was an Alpha Company. I was a squad leader. I was a sergeant, and deployed to Iraq. Spent a little over 12 months in Iraq in Southeast Baghdad. Came back from that deployment, and kind of was at a decision point in my career. I did decide to stay in, and then sometime around 2008, I had already had my degree. I made the decision to commission as an officer, so I went through officer candidate school, and then got assigned as a platoon leader in one of the 161 infantry.
Yeah, so you've come up kind of from being an enlisted infantryman as an E1 to now commanding one of the 161.
My first assignment, so I come out of basic training in AIT, and I was the battalion commander's driver. So it's a little, it's really funny to me, you know.
Who's the battalion commander?
It was that? Lieutenant Colonel Forbes.
Okay.
So that's around 99. So it's just funny to me that I started as his driver, and now I'm just really sitting one seat over in the truck, but I'm now the battalion commander, and I have my own driver who's a young kid that's probably going to go off and do great things.
So kind of briefly talk about one of the 161. We could sit here and probably talk about it for hours. The lineage in Spokane is phenomenal. I think they've been there, what now, 90 years plus in Spokane, Washington. The unit dates back to the beginning of the Guard.
It's 128.
It's 128 in Spokane now. See, and that's that. You know more about this. I always say if I need anything, 1st Battalion, 161st Infantry, I always go to you because you know the history of that unit like no other. I mean, we could probably talk about it for hours, but quickly talk about, you know, the roots of the unit and where it came from.
So the origins of the battalion. So in 1855 in the Washington Territory, the territorial governor, Governor Stevens, needed an escort from Spokane to Walla Walla. There was Native American conflicts at the time, and there was no formal militia at that time in the Washington Territory. So he rose a militia in Spokane of mostly miners and loggers who volunteered to be his escort. The roles aren't real concrete, but some around 40 soldiers. They commissioned a couple officers, and they escorted the governor to Walla Walla. During that trip, they were attacked several times, ambushed several times, not only by Native Americans, but also criminal elements out on the frontier. And they won every battle, and they gained the nickname the Spokane Invincibles. And there's been some history written on them. If you were to look it up online, you'll find references to the Spokane Invincibles. And that's the early origins, and it's the first militia in the state of Washington, at least from my understanding. And it's not the organized militia in the National Guard sense, because it was ad hoc, but they were called into the governor's service.
Yeah, and really since 1855, the number of missions they've done, the Philippine insurrection, I think, was one that they were on. And then elements in World War One and World War Two, yep. really. And then all the way down to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. So it's got a long lineage yep. Just here in Washington State.
Yeah, and it's been headquartered in Spokane since its inception. So the companies, you know, have moved around as populations have grown. We're presently all in Eastern Washington, headquarters in Spokane. Mm-hmm. We have our Charlie company's in Spokane. My Alpha company's in Yakima. My Bravo company is in Richland in the Tri-Cities. And then my Ford support company's in Ephrata. So we really cover, you know, most of the land throughout Eastern Washington. And the majority of our soldiers hail from Eastern Washington.
Yeah. Yep. So for those that don't know, in Washington, we have two infantry battalions. We've got 3rd Battalion here on the west side of the state. And then on the east side of the state, 1st Battalion, one of the 161. And you guys are the Highlanders.
We are.
We got Dark Rifles here on the west side of the state. So for those that don't know, like myself, why the Highlanders?
So the Highlander nickname comes from a partnership we have with a unit out of Calgary, a Canadian Reserve Regiment called the Calgary Highlanders. In the 1950s, they were marching in the Armed Forces Torchlight Parade in Spokane, and they were looking for a unit to host them. To help cut cost, mm-hmm. basically. And someone got in, you know, the story goes, they met in a bar, like all good stories. One of their officers or NCOs met one of our representatives, and then they built a relationship. And then my battalion, the one of the 161 offered to host the Calgary Highlanders, and they did. Mm-hmm. And then in the years that followed, they had such a good time that they decided to do a reunion. And so, you know, that reunion has endured. So every year, in 1 year, this year, for example, August 31st, it's in Spokane, we're hosting, we'll have Calgary Highlanders come down as well as members of our unit. The way we do it now is a more of a formal military ball. It started as a backyard barbecue. Mm-hmm. But as traditions grow and evolve, it's been formalized over the years. And then in the next year, we'll send reps up to Calgary and they will host, and they do a more of a dining in dress mess, which is interesting to see their traditions. So long story short, after World War II, and like you mentioned, the regiment fought in the Pacific under 25th Infantry Division, Guadalcanal, Philippines, Luzon, and Manila. The unit came back, and the Army was transitioning from the regimental structure to the brigade structure. And when that happened, the battalions got somewhat split up, mm-hmm. And they didn't have a call sign at that time because they were using the regimental call sign prior to that, which was Lynx, incidentally. So that was taken because they didn't want to take the regiment's call sign. So for the period after World War II, they didn't have a standard call sign. And so then from the Calgary Highlander relationship, and because that was so enduring, we adopted the Highlander call sign from them. So we owe that to them.
Yeah. And you've had the privilege of serving in both 3 of the 161 and 1 of the 161, probably like many of our infantry officers yep. and enlisted members. Probably not much of a difference, but, you know, I would assume probably a little bits here and there. So what are some of the differences you've seen just in your time?
So, you know, yeah, I've been in both battalions and I enjoyed my time in both battalions. I was in Dark Rifles for about 2 years and I've been in Highlanders for about 16 years off and on. So, you know, obviously my experiences have shaped my loyalties and I command the battalion now, but Dark Rifles is a fine battalion. I enjoyed my time there. Differences, you know, some of it is geography induced, mm-hmm. Being predominantly stationed in Eastern Washington, you know, from its inception, you know, the cultures are a little different sometimes. We have a high percentage of Hispanic soldiers, which is unique to our battalion. I think we're the highest in the state, as well as other ethnicities and so on. And with that comes some cultural differences. I think the isolation, being away from the flagpole, has really created an identity of self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. We don't expect help from anybody to accomplish our objectives. We expect to be able to solve our problems on our own. Sometimes maybe to a fault, we won't ask for help, maybe even if we need it. But it's that idea that, hey, we're out here and we're going to do this, and it's going to be us that accomplishes whatever we have to accomplish.
Yeah. So you kind of lead into my next question. You're a battalion commander. Why should a soldier who's watching this want to join your battalion?
Okay, so I'll read to you. We have this document called the Highlander Way, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it summarizes what it means to be a Highlander, both as a soldier and as a leader. And it's something we've compiled that really describes the past and also kind of charters the way forward. So I'll read the first principle of it. Is the Highlanders plan and conduct training in a manner that provides a reason for our soldiers to come back next month. We provide unmatched experience. and we look at how we conduct training. Yes, we're an infantry battalion. Yes, we're going to do infantry stuff, right? That's our mission. We want to close with and destroy the enemy. We want to be the best infantry battalion we can be. But how we do that matters. And we want the soldiers to constantly either have been doing something awesome or getting ready to do something awesome. And that may be, you know, doing an air assault out of helicopters. That may be doing a live fire in a shoot house, kicking indoors and shooting targets indoors. Integrating fires, mortars, whatever assets we can get available to enhance our training events, that well-planned training that at its core is something soldiers want to be a part of is what keeps people in our unit. You know, yeah, there's enlistment bonuses, mm-hmm. there's all the extra things, but really it's the experience that matters. Are they getting what they signed up for? Are they getting more than what they signed up for? And that's what we give soldiers.
Yeah, it's the you join the guard to do a job and have an experience.
And I'll brag a little. We do lead the state in retention. Okay, number one battalion in the state for retention. So I think we're doing this. I think we're doing it well. And that's a credit to the subordinate leaders. I don't plan the training for every company. I couldn't. Okay, I have company commanders and first sergeants. I have senior NCOs, and they've embraced this philosophy. And they look at every drill weekend, whether it's Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and say, hey, what are we doing this month that soldiers are going to tell their parents or their friends about? What are they going to go back and brag at work about? Hey, I did this awesome thing. We flew in helicopters up into the mountains. Then I had to walk 3K and then we laid in an ambush, and then we got mortars firing and I was calling an indirect and the snipers were shooting or whatever that thing might be, to provide that experience. So, in the Army, we have our mission essential tasks. Okay. We knock out mission essential tasks, but it's the experience. It's the way we do it that matters. And I really credit my subordinate commanders, company commanders and the first sergeants and the squad leaders for embracing that and understanding that the experience of that private is really the most important thing, that we train them through those experiences and we build a proficiency and then they want to come back.
Yeah. So kind of in closing, one of the biggest questions I like to ask people, and you spent most of your career in 1161, you started there and you kind of rose up through the ranks. Now you're commanding there. But this is more of a question of what has your guard service meant to you as an individual?
That's a great question. So, initially I paid for college through the guard, right? And that was a huge, huge help for me in my career, I think I'm a parent. We always want our kids to have it better than we did and so on and so forth. And that's helped me achieve that. The deployment to Iraq was shaped me a lot. Okay. It shaped me as a leader and a human being. We were doing raids and patrols and kicking in doors where we had an AOR, an area of responsibility over there. And it was one of the first times in my life that I was leading other soldiers and the stakes were high. And the importance of the ability to lead when the stakes are high, not just for me, but for the soldiers in my unit, because, those stakes are going to be high again. At some point we're going to exit training and I don't know if it's under my command, the next guy, 10 guys from now or gals. But at some point the battalion's going to go to war again. It's gone to almost every major war we've been in. It's going to happen again. So that's what it means to me. So at some point, I learned, and one of the reasons I stayed in was that I felt like I had to impart that on the next generation. That if I'm going to retire at some point, right? I may be in the unit when it goes to fight. I may not, right? I may not be around. I may be an old guy, watching it on TV. But I would be remiss. I would never forgive myself if I left the organization in the hands of leaders that weren't prepared to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. No,
that's fantastic.
And that's why I stuck around. And that's why I take great care in those company commanders and those platoon leaders and those squad leaders, first sergeants, platoon sergeants, because they may be the ones carrying the colors.
Yeah. Great. Fantastic answer. And like I said, I've known you as long as I've been a commissioned officer. I think literally the first day I commissioned, you were there with my packet and everything was extremely well organized. And I've always appreciated your friendship and your vigor and your enthusiasm about the guard. Mm-hmm. I mean, you truly are one of the guys I think that's most enthusiastic about this place. So I appreciate you coming on and joining us and talking about your story. So,
all right. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. If you like the video, give it a like. If you want to watch more, subscribe to the channel and make sure to comment if you got anything below. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Joe.